love to start first to just talk to you about your journey into the industry and whether you sort of always knew that you wanted to work in content creation.
Well, obviously I'm old, so the words content creation don't mean anything to me, which is not to denigrate that term. But yeah, I think I always wanted to be involved with drama. And then I pretty much failed my way through every other aspect of the performing arts until I ended up as a writer, which was something that I could vaguely do. And so I worked in theatre and crept into television through my 20s and just kind of kept going. And then later on, I had gradually worked out how to be a producer. So gradually did more and more of that work until eventually I thought I knew enough to start a production company, which was my big mistake, actually, because I still don't really know how to run a production company. But I've given that a go, and my company has existed for 11 years now.
And very successfully too. Was there a reason why you wanted it to be sort of an independent production company as opposed to kind of going down the route of being part of a bigger broadcaster?
Yes, I think that I was always interested in working with new writers and doing slightly more out there projects. So there was a kind of self-defined path that we stepped down. Of course, if you step down that path, what you find is that nobody wants to take you into their fold and wrap you up in their multi-billion pound corporation. So the combination of the two things has kept us fully independent for all that time.
And how do you think, sort of looking back on all of that now? Are you happy with that route that you took?
I say we because my team is involved in all the decisions that we take. We are happy with that route. I guess I feel there's too much consolidation in the industry. There's too much merging of corporate identities. And crucially, the worrying thing is the merging of buyers with sellers. And it's kind of understandable given the way the industry is moving, but it has definitely had an effect on creativity at an editorial level. And it's flattened out the range of television drama because money always seeks out the surest path in any creative art form. But in television, that is accentuated. So the money wants a certain kind of show, and that isn't necessarily always good.
And I'd love to talk more about that creativity side of things and sort of how that really impacts the artists. Like, what have you noticed in terms of how that affects, the creative heads that are coming into that environment?
Well, if you look around, you might say that what we can see is a very large number of extremely well-produced average television dramas, which follow quite tropey paths through their storylining. Of course, there are always the outliers. There are always people who are so brilliant that they're able to do something different, but those are very much exceptions. If you think of the multiplicity of shows that we can watch across streamers and across the broadcasters, everyone has become much more centralized in the shows that actually do business. And that's always been a feature of television and film drama. It's just that it's more so now.
And of course, that has an impact on what we're talking about with big picture in terms of things like diversity and inclusion, environment and sustainability, and the business practices in which we're working, which of course means both the content that we're producing and the way in which the content is being made. And do you feel like your approach to these topics has changed since you first started working in the industry to now?
I honestly don't think our approach has changed that much. And we have kind of insured ourselves by having a very low overhead. It doesn't cost much money to run Balloon. So that means that we can afford to be quiet. We can afford to not be in production. And believe me, we have been not in production a lot. Because the thing about television dramas, I'm kind of speaking as a writer now, is that you've come up with someone's sold you on some kind of concept, and everyone's very nice, and the money is enticing. So you agree to do it, and then the problem is that you then have to do it. That's the problem. And you find that, well, how interested am I in this, actually? I'm interested in the £30,000 that someone's offering to pay me, but really, really, how much do I care about this subject matter? And, you know, that is the signifier of quality in television drama. You can tell if the writer really cares about the subject matter. And that doesn't necessarily limit itself to left field alternative type dramas. Even the big mainstream dramas, you can tell the ones which I've really, really been emotionally invested in. And it's that emotional investment that finance doesn't really understand, because money always thinks that people will be fundamentally interested in money. And writers think they're interested in money, but really there's other stuff that they care about. And this is the conundrum that assails all screenwriters in television all the time.
And do you feel like that has an impact on how well it's received? Like if the kind of drive and integrity of the story that is being told, if that's not there, or if that's in any way, as you're describing, sort of compromised by the writer because they were enticed by a monetary thing or anything like that? Do you think that has an impact on the reception of the story and what the audiences think of it?
Well, that's my contention. That's what I would love to be true. I would love to. I mean, you know, if you take Fleabag, for example, she had been writing that show in her head her whole life, and she couldn't wait to tell that story. And she really didn't care what anyone said or thought about how she should do it. She just did it. And thankfully, she found herself in a powerful enough position that people were prepared to go along with Phoebe Waller-Bridge's vision for it. That's great. And, you know, it's one of the best shows of the last decade. But lots of shows don't find the writer in a position of power for lots of reasons. Inexperience, emerging skill, coming from groups, cultural groups that are not properly attended to in the marketplace, being the wrong sex, you know, all the usual things stop people being able to push purity of vision past production companies and commissioners, and stops people from getting better at it, because getting better at it is a huge part of being a television writer. None of us starting out in television really know what we're doing. And the trick is to make that not knowing what you're doing good.
As in part of the charm.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. Fleabag was, I guess you could argue, was a little bit rough in places, rough around the edges. But that was part of the charm, because all of that was carried by the singularity of Phoebe Waller-Bridge's vision. I take her as an example, but that, you know, there are other examples. There are examples of writers who we probably shouldn't mention in a recorded session, who you can point to the ones which they cared about, and you can see the ones they didn't really care about, the ones that were actually there to build their career or win them a prize or whatever. So, I mean, I have a belief that writers come up with really good ideas maybe once every decade. And if a writer can pull off something really great three times over the course of a career, well, then they are to be spoken of in a different way. Russell T has pulled it off maybe four times and he's still going. So he's an outstanding writer. There are some shows in there that he plainly didn't care quite so much about or got written too quickly. And I only single him out because he is one of the more prolific writers of our generation. Yeah, probably the best one too, in all honesty.
And what do you think then of the sort of commissioning structure? Because I feel like a lot of what we've spoken about comes from the writer when they have a kind of a story to tell that feels quite personal perhaps. But then how does that work when a writer's commissioned?
Well, I think the commissioners are, in all honesty, getting better at, and I think that commissioners who are often cut off from some of the more pressing financial concerns these days are trying to do something different. But what they need is writers delivered to them who are able to work to the standard required. So there's some risk aversion there, quite justifiably in many cases. It's very hard to be a commissioner, I think, but they are definitely getting better at it. I think there's exciting times at the BBC. And I think the potentially exciting times at ITV as well, who've slightly woken up to the fact that they can't be just whacking on one existential detective after another on ITV1. So they've created another channel, another streamer, and they're going to try and do something different. Well, we'll see if they succeed, but I think it's interesting.
Talk to me about Balloon. You know, do you have a mission statement? What's been your sort of ambitions for your company?
The thing that we try to do is to focus ourselves around ideas that light us up or make us excited. And we're ready for that excitement to be held in one person inside the company. So our development executives are not told particularly what to look for. They're not policed that carefully. And if they seem to believe in something, that we try for that to be enough. And the other thing we are determined to do is to stand by our writers for as long as it takes. And as long as it takes for an emerging writer is at a minimum 3 to 5 years, and sometimes longer, because looking after writers it's a good thing, but it's a hangover from the days when a very particular group of highly educated white people, of which I am one, got taken under the wings of other highly educated white people and looked after. And I have so been the beneficiary of that in the early part of my career. So all we do is make sure that we look after all the writers who we're interested in, and we hope from a slightly wider demographic.
Which is amazing that you give your writers such longevity and such support. How do you try and nurture and showcase these projects and sort of make sure that the demographic you are showcasing is, you know, representative of our current world?
Well, the first thing we try and do is pay them. We try and make money change hands. Years ago, actually not that many years ago, it would be a long time before any money changed hands. You know, you'd have your writer hanging around writing treatments for you for as long as it took for you to convince a broadcaster to fund whatever, a treatment or a script. Partly because the streamers are not really interested in that kind of development, and partly because we do want to see writers able to make time to write. We try and create structures where they are being paid relatively fairly for what they do, and we're interested in the occasions where they might be running out of money. I know this sounds really kind of like ground level, but that's exactly what was afforded to me back in the day. A couple of occasions when I literally told my producer that I had run out of money and was given some money. And that is incredibly important.
It's a massive barrier to entry. Like, you know, there are lots of assumptions made in many workplaces that, you know, people are able to live in London, people are able to kind of to show up in these rooms. So,
I mean, when I started in the television industry, it was literally a business of gentlemen amateurs. And I really mean that, you know, the only women I saw were typing up scripts for us geniuses. And gradually over the years, the women have arrived. And I think they've pretty much fully arrived now, hopefully. You can tell the women have arrived because the men are so constantly grumbling that they're now some kind of oppressed minority. you know, and people of, you know, diverse ethnicity are starting to arrive. And, you know, because the women took 30 years, and we're probably 10 years into that process of moving towards recognizing the diversity of our population in terms of our popular culture. So that's all happening. We find that very exciting, you know, and it's something that we want to do more of. And we're aware that we don't quite know how to do that, but the key to it is having, you know, the industry is divided up into makers and choosers. There are not enough diverse choosers, commissioners, people running production companies. These are still more or less exclusively reserved for white middle-class people. And until that changes, there will not be proper diversity across the art form. But hopefully that is starting to happen.
Can we help that change?
Yeah. Yeah. We have to. We have to appoint diverse people, and I don't just mean ethnically diverse people, I mean diverse people into positions of authority where they are choosers as well as executors. You know, Danielle Scott Houghton was in Balloon for 6 years, and we made Champion last year, and Danielle, who has turned into an incredibly skillful producer, was alongside that show with an all-black cast and, you know, a very diverse crew, and did a brilliant job, so brilliant a job that the BBC poached her, and now she's a BBC commissioner. And are currently a company of three white men and one white woman. But we have to do something about that. We have to fix that. You can't be satisfied with that way of looking at things. It's very tricky because people who've been denied opportunity don't have the skills and the experience. So what to do? Well, you have to do a bit of, you have to find some pretty exciting people who want to learn and work with those people.
Congratulations on Champion, by the way. It's a really wonderful show. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it almost killed us.
I bet. And you're sort of only just out, because it only aired on BBC the beginning of this month. Do you feel like you've only just sort of stepped out of that experience?
Yeah, we've only just stepped out of it. But I mean, it's part of our company ethos. It's a small company. So if we're making a show, we are all in. There's lots and lots of disadvantages to that. So now we're just behind with our development. We're behind with everything. We're all over the place. But we did pour everything we had into that show. And we can literally put our hands on our hearts and say that, because we don't actually have any other possible way of working, because we don't have six development executives. We have two. And there's only one producer available to run post-production, and that's me. So you can sort of do that work and really enjoy doing it, because, you know, that's the job. And it isn't 16 other things. That's probably why I can't persuade anyone to invest in my production company, because that's never going to be a profitable way of working, but it is an enjoyable way of working.
And so rare as well, I feel like, the need to sort of multitask and also be bombarded at every angle at the moment with all kinds of different forms of content or social media or whatever it is. So that feels really rare to have such a, you know, wonderfully single-minded approach to something and really do be immersed in it.
Yeah, lots of disadvantages to it, but a singularity of approach and vision and getting behind a writer and getting behind a production team, these are the most satisfying bits of making television drama. All the other stuff is vaguely shit, you know, if you think about it. Hanging around, begging people for money, reading horrible scripts that are never going to be good, being nice to horrible people, you know, all of that stuff is a bit of shit. But sitting with an editor, putting a show together, working with musicians, doing special effects, making it all hang together. I mean, who wouldn't enjoy that?
And why Champion? Why did you want to make that show and make it the way that you did?
Because Danielle Scott Houghton, our development executive, said that was what she wanted to do and what we should want to do. And because we trust her and her belief in writers, that's what we did. Mm. And she's just turned out to be abundantly correct in her initial thought, which was to bring Candice Carty-Williams in. A novelist who'd never really written a screenplay before, because she just believed that Candice could do it, and she can.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to have Candice and Danielle at Content London last year, and they were both brilliant.
Yeah, they are both brilliant. And my only regret is I don't have Danielle anymore, but she's gone somewhere really important to do a really big job, and we have absolute confidence in her ability to do it.
And who is inspiring you in the industry at the moment, other than the wonderful Danielle? Be that, you know, a show that you're loving, or writers or big execs that you think are doing great things, or even a new emerging person that's inspired you?
Well, I think that just on a slightly more aerial point of view, Lindsay Salt is a very astute and good appointment to the BBC. I think she is, she's not arranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. She's actually sweeping everything aside. She's going to try and do something new. She's bold. She's young, which I guess is a good thing. She's a woman. Am I allowed to say that? Let's just say she's very good at being in a discussion and listening. So, and the team that she's putting around her, I think is strong. And I think if the pendulum can swing back the BBC's way a little bit, I think we might see some excitement there. At the other end, we know we're working with Nathan Fode, who's a very, very funny writer who we think is going to be amazing. We're working with a writer in Scotland called Gillian McCormack, who I think is amazing. We're working with Nancy Harris, BAFTA nominated Nancy Harris, who we've been associated with for 10 years now. And we think great things will come to her. So these are the writers that are exciting us at the moment. The best show on television this year has been The Gold. I don't know if you've seen that. It's a straight ahead crime thriller, which is a recreation of the Brinksmat bullion robbery back in the 80s, which should not have been good, but really, really was. That's my best show of the year.
And to round us off, Brian, what would you like to see happen in the future? How would you like to see the industry change for the better?
I would like to see some attention paid to the idea of an independent production sector, because we don't have an independent production sector anymore. We have a corporate production sector. And I would like to see government legislation that somehow interfered with buyers becoming sellers. I'm concerned by the rise of the studios and the slightly, I wouldn't say underhand, but let's just say overly proactive way that they formulate their business relationships and co-opt creativity and IP. It's too cozy, and some great things may come of it, but not enough great things. We need more people. We need more outliers, more renegades, more non-conformists, more talented idiots, just throwing their hats into the ring. All I would say is you can't make drama until you are actually really, really singularly bent on it, almost to the exclusion of all else. And I think that that is perhaps not the issue, but the question for the big picture going forward.